quiet of the cells, the night shift starts to spin.
Welcome to Base by Base, the paper cast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Thanks for listening, and don't forget to follow and rate us in your podcast app. You know, when you look at the incredible, bustling city that is a single human cell, it is so easy to just focus on the builders.
Right, the glamorous parts.
Exactly. You think about the ribosomes furiously manufacturing new proteins, or like the mitochondria acting as little power plants generating energy to keep the lights on. But for you listening right now, I want you to imagine a completely different part of the city. What really happens when the cellular recycling plant breaks down from just one faulty part?
Well, I mean, it results in absolute systemic chaos. We love to talk about how things are built in biology, but waste management is arguably the most critical yet underappreciated system in the human body.
Yeah, totally overlooked.
Oh, completely. If you cannot clear the debris, the entire city just grinds to a halt.
Right. And today, the sources you shared with us look at a truly devastating real-world problem. Imagine a system specifically designed to clear out dangerous cellular waste and simultaneously alert your immune system to invading viruses.
A highly specialized dual-purpose system.
Yeah. Now imagine a single misfolded protein piece in that system. Just one tiny genetic typo. Instead of merely breaking that one machine, that single piece turns the entire factory floor into a toxic pileup.
It's terrifying, really.
It is. And that pileup triggers a cascade of severe, life-threatening inflammation and massive immune failure in a newborn.
It is a remarkable, albeit incredibly tragic, biological domino effect.
Yeah.
And what stands out to me is, well, the sheer level of scientific detail required to track that exact sequence of events.
Oh, yeah. Going all the way from a patient's bedside in the intensive care unit down through the cellular machinery.
And pinpointing the problem to a single altered amino acid.
Yeah.
It's just staggering.
Which is exactly why today we celebrate the work of Robin Wingard, Machtel Daoud, Sergio Guerrero Castillo, and a massive international research team. This includes the Undiagnosed Diseases Network and incredible institutions across the Netherlands, Germany, the US, and beyond.
A truly global effort.
Yeah, who have advanced our understanding of how a single genetic typo alters cellular recycling and immunity. The mission of this deep dive is to extract the critical insights from this incredibly detailed research paper and to really understand the mechanics of this devastating disease.
And, you know, to really grasp how the breakdown occurs, we have to start by understanding the machinery itself. You have to know what normal looks like before you can understand the pathology.
Okay, let's unpack this. For you listening, think of the standard proteasome, we'll just call it the SP, as a daily trash compactor for all your cells.
Also, waste disposal.
Exactly. It's constantly taking old, damaged, or unneeded proteins and chopping them up into harmless little amino acid pieces so they can be reused. Structurally, it is this massive barrel-shaped complex made of multiple rings of proteins.
Precisely. It's a highly efficient disposal unit. But the immune system requires something far more refined than a standard trash compactor.
It needs a serious upgrade.
Right. When a cell is under attack, let's say by a viral infection, it gets exposed to pro-inflammatory signals. A key one is a molecule called interferon gamma.
Which acts like an alarm bell, right?
Exactly. It triggers the cell to physically swap out three specific cutting blades inside that barrel, replacing them with highly specialized versions. This newly configured machine is what we call the immunoproteasome, or IP.
I love this concept. So if the SP is your standard everyday kitchen trash compactor, the IP is like a top secret document shredder used exclusively by the immune system.
A perfect analogy.
Yeah, it doesn't just indiscriminately destroy the virus, it specifically shreds it into highly readable fragments, which we call antigens. The cell then takes those shredded viral documents and displays them on its surface.
It's an elegant early warning system.
Right, it's basically waving a red flag to the passing immune system saying, hey, I've been infected by this specific virus, you need to destroy me.
That is exactly how our adaptive immunity functions. But when that system fails, we see a group of severe diseases called PAAS.
Proteasome-associated autoinflammatory syndromes.
You got it. Now, historically, we understood PAAS to be a recessive condition. This means you need to inherit two broken copies of a gene to actually get sick.
So with only one broken copy, we'd be fine.
Right. In those recessive cases, the standard machinery still kind of works, but the immune-specific machinery is severely hobbled.
But the deep dive we're doing today completely flips that script, doesn't it? The researchers are looking at a dominant version of the disease, which they call pre-ASID.
A much more aggressive form, yes.
Right. In this version, just one single mutant copy of a gene causes massive immunodeficiency and systemic inflammation.
It does. And the clinical reality for these patients is agonizing. The researchers detail the clinical histories of 7 individuals from 5 entirely unrelated families.
From the very beginning of their lives.
Exactly. The manifestations of this disease began in the very first year of life for these infants. We are talking about persistent, severe infections alongside massive inflammation of the liver, the gut, and the muscles.
It is genuinely heartbreaking to read the case files in the source material. Like, the paper outlines one patient who suffered from severe fluid accumulation before they were even born.
Just devastating.
And tragically, they died of fatal multi-organ failure at just 2 months old. Another patient survived infancy but suffered such severe continuous inflammatory lung disease that they required a double lung transplant by the time they were 10 years old.
It is vital to understand that these are not just recurrent childhood fevers. It's a fundamental breakdown of the immune system's ability to regulate itself.
They're swinging between extremes, right?
Yes. These infants are oscillating between a total inability to fight off standard viruses and a hypoinflammatory state where their immune system attacks their own organs.
See, this is where I need to push back a little, because this is what I just don't quite get. If these patients have one bad copy of the gene, but they still have one perfectly good copy, why is this dominant form so much more aggressive?
It's a great point.
Like, why is it so hyper-focused on immune failure compared to the recessive forms we already knew about? If you have half the factory working normally, shouldn't you be okay, or at least have a much milder version of the disease?
This raises an important question, and honestly, it is exactly the core mystery the research team needed to solve. To understand why half a working factory isn't enough, we have to transition from observing the clinical symptoms to looking at the laboratory tools they use to unravel this mechanism.
Right, because obviously you can't just put a cell under a normal microscope and physically see a single protein malfunctioning.
Right.
So I know they started by looking at the DNA of these patients. Did they find like a massive missing chunk of genetic code?
Actually, no. That's what makes it so insidious. They used genetic sequencing and found what we call monoallelic missense variants in a gene called the PSMB8 gene.
Wait, so out of all the DNA?
In simple terms, out of the billions of letters in the genetic code, they found just a single letter typo in one copy of the gene.
Just one letter. Wow. So they know exactly what the typo is, but knowing the typo doesn't actually explain the factory breakdown, right?
Exactly. DNA sequencing only tells you what the typo is. It doesn't tell you how it ruins the machine.
Right. It's like knowing a specific gear was manufactured slightly wrong.
But you don't know what happens when you actually try to put it into the engine. To figure that out, the team had to move beyond genetics and into proteomics. They utilized a highly advanced, innovative technique called complexome profiling.
Okay, I really want to understand this methodology because it sounds fascinating. How does complexome profiling differ from the standard ways we look at proteins?
Well, traditional mass spectrometry, which is how we usually identify proteins, is a bit like throwing a whole cell into a blender.
Making a protein smoothie.
Exactly. It breaks everything apart, analyzes the soup, and tells you what individual proteins are present. But that destroys the context.
Because you lose how they fit together.
Right. Complexome profiling is much more delicate. Imagine trying to figure out how a complex mechanical watch works. Traditional methods smash the watch with a hammer and sweep up the loose gears. Complexome profiling carefully takes the back off the watch so we can see the gears while they are still physically connected to each other.
That is a brilliant way to look at it. So rather than looking at a pile of loose car parts scattered on the floor, complexome profiling lets researchers walk through the cellular factory and actually see the assembly line stalled in real time.
That is precisely what it allows. They can gently separate the cellular components while keeping the multi-protein complexes fully intact.
That's incredible.
It is. They literally map the weight and composition of every partially built machine on the factory floor.
Mm-hmm.
And what is incredible is that they didn't just rely on this physical mapping. They paired it with advanced 3D structural modeling software to see the invisible forces at play.
Yes, I was reading about this. They used a tool with an amazing name. The frustratometer.
I know, it sounds a bit like a gadget from a cartoon.
It really does, but it's actually doing some incredibly heavy computational lifting. The sources say it predicts steric clashes and energetic frustrations inside the protein structures. But let's clarify that for the listener. A steric clash just means two physical objects trying to occupy the exact same space, right? Like trying to force a square peg into a round hole.
Exactly. Proteins have to fold into very specific, precise 3D shapes to work. If a genetic typo substitutes a tiny amino acid for a giant, bulky one, that square peg causes the surrounding structure to contort.
Because there's just no room for it.
Right. The software shows you exactly how the protein becomes physically frustrated trying to accommodate that bulky mutation.
And that combination, the real-time factory mapping combined with this structural frustration modeling, leads us directly to the core mechanism of the disease.
It does. And what's fascinating here is that the researchers discovered the mutant subunits aren't just sitting around being broken and useless. They're actively toxic to the assembly process. They exhibit what biologists call a dominant negative effect.
Okay, let's make sure we are totally clear on this concept for the listener. Dominant negative means the bad copy actively sabotages the good copies.
Precisely.
It's like having one slightly misshapen brick. That one brick doesn't just fail to hold weight on its own. When you try to put it in the wall, it throws off the alignment of everything around it, actively preventing the rest of the wall from being built.
A perfect way to visualize it. Through the complexum profiling, the researchers saw this happening live. These mutant proteins are inefficiently incorporated into the growing proteasome barrels.
So they actually try to get into the structure?
Yes. But when they try to slot into place, their misshapen structure jams the machinery. As a result, the total number of fully assembled, functioning immunoproteasome complexes drops by about 50%.
Even though the cell is desperately screaming for them to be built, the cell is under stress, the interferon gamma alarm is ringing, telling the cell, build more shredders, build more shredders. But the assembly line is totally jammed.
It's a complete bottleneck.
And what blew my mind in the complexum data is that they didn't just notice a drop in finished products, they actually found the jam itself on the assembly line.
Yes. They isolated a specific aberrant buildup of a partial complex.
Yeah.
And because of the precision of the profiling, they know it weighs exactly 440 kilodaltons.
Wow. Very specific.
This stalled intermediate is the smoking gun. You see, building a proteasome requires scaffolding proteins, specialized chaperones, that hold the rings together while the inner blades slide into place.
And then they're supposed to leave, right?
Exactly. Once the blades are locked in perfectly, the chaperones are supposed to detach so the barrel can finally seal and start working.
But because that mutant brick is misshapen and causes a steric clash, it creates so much structural frustration that the chaperones get confused. They're waiting for a perfect fit that never happens.
So they just hold on.
They never let go. This stalled intermediate is essentially a half-built barrel with the scaffolding permanently superglued to it. It can't mature into a working shredder, and it can't be easily cleared away.
And this cellular fallout is what drives the systemic disease. You have a microscopic factory floor entirely littered with half-built, useless machines.
It's just garbage everywhere.
Everywhere. This massive accumulation triggers a biological panic button called the integrated stress response. The cell realizes it is choking on its own garbage.
It panics. The cell starts throwing out these stress alarms. But what I found interesting in the source material is the type of panic.
Yes, the researchers noted that while general stress markers absolutely spike, it specifically bypasses classical endoplasmic reticulum stress.
Wait, why does that matter?
Well, the marker that signals stress in the ER, the area where most proteins are folded, remains completely normal. This is a crucial finding because it tells us the stress is localized exclusively to this specific cytosolic assembly failure.
Oh, I see. The cell knows exactly where the problem is, it just can't fix it.
Exactly.
So the cell is incredibly stressed, the immune shredders aren't being built, the garbage is piling up, and this translates into some bizarre and highly memorable clinical findings in the actual patients.
The symptoms are profound.
We mentioned earlier the severe immunodeficiency. Their bodies just aren't producing or maintaining the B cells needed for long-term immunity. But there was also a distinct visual clue under the microscope. In the blood and bone marrow of some of these patients, doctors found what they call leukocyte vacuolization. Can you explain what that actually looks like?
Certainly. When doctors looked at the patient's immune cells, the leukocytes, under a microscope, they saw that the cells were filled with these distinct, deep, pink to purple inclusions.
Like little colored spots inside the cell.
Yes, they look like coarse, dense pockets of material taking up space inside the cell.
It's almost poetic in a terrifying way. The cell can't process its waste, so you can literally see the biological garbage bags piling up inside the white blood cells.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this dominant negative assembly disruption actually unifies our understanding of this entire category of disease.
Because there were other genes involved before, right?
For a long time, we knew of different mutations across several different immune genes that caused similar severe diseases. But this paper proves they all share a singular unifying mechanism.
Right. The researchers took all known mutations across those related genes and mapped them using the 3D software. They found that almost all of these dominant negative variants hit highly conserved, structurally vulnerable sites that are buried deep in the protein interface.
The structural anchors.
Yeah. If you mutate a protein on its outside surface, maybe it just functions a little slower. But if you mutate the buried hinges that hold the whole barrel together, the entire assembly line collapses.
Which brings us to the profound clinical applications of this deep dive. Now that we understand this mechanism, those deep pink leukocyte inclusions you mentioned, they might serve as a rapid, supportive diagnostic feature.
Because it's a fast visual check.
Exactly. If an infant presents in the clinic with unexplained severe inflammation and immune failure, a simple blood smear looking for those specific pink inclusions could point doctors toward an assembly defect much faster than waiting weeks for full genomic sequencing to come back.
And even when they do eventually sequence the genome, we now have a predictive model. If a patient comes in with a completely new, never-before-seen variant in this gene, scientists don't have to guess if it's dangerous.
They can test it virtually.
Right. They can run it through the frustratometer and computational models to map exactly how deeply it frustrates the 3D protein structure. If they see it hits one of those buried, conserved interfaces, they know immediately they're dealing with a severe, dominant negative saboteur.
They can anticipate the severity of the disease before the symptoms fully manifest. It moves us from a reactive stance to a proactive one.
Which is huge for these kids.
It really is. However, it is vital to acknowledge the limitations of the study and what remains unknown. Science is an ongoing process.
Of course. There's always another mystery.
For instance, the B cells in these patients are devastated, which leads to their severe immunodeficiency. Yet, their T cells, which are another crucial arm of the adaptive immune system, remain largely normal in numbers and basic function. Why are T cells completely unaffected while B cells are wiped out by the exact same genetic typo?
That is such a fascinating puzzle. The paper hypothesizes that it might be because the thymus, which is the organ where T cells go to mature, actually uses a completely different, highly specialized subunit for its machinery, bypassing the mutated gene entirely.
It relies on a different blueprint.
Yeah, so the T cell training facility is essentially using a different supplier for its parts, meaning they avoid the toxic pileup. But as the authors note, that doesn't explain everything because some patients in the study did have mild T cell issues, suggesting there might be another mechanism at play that we haven't discovered yet.
Furthermore, more research is definitely needed to determine the exact molecular origin of those pink leukocyte inclusions.
Right, like what are they actually made of?
Exactly. Are they massive aggregations of the stalled half-built complexes? Are they just normal cellular proteins that couldn't be degraded because the shredders are broken? We need more physical data to confirm their exact composition.
So, what does this all mean? We started with a newborn suffering from mysterious fatal inflammation and tracked it all the way down to a single frustrated amino acid causing a catastrophic factory pileup. How do we synthesize all of this information for the listener?
If we have to distill this down to its core, monoallelic PSMB8 variants act as dominant negative saboteurs, completely derailing the immunoproteasome assembly line. This failure leaves cells drowning in unfinished stalled complexes and triggers severe systemic autoinflammation and immunodeficiency in infants. What does this mean for our ability to identify and intercept these stalled cellular assembly lines before irreversible organ damage occurs?
It is a profound question, and it leaves me with a final thought for you to consider as we wrap up. If computational tools can accurately predict dominant negative effects based purely on 3D structural tension, could we eventually map every possible catastrophic variant in the human immune system using AI?
Wow.
Right. Could we have a master database of every theoretical saboteur variant before a patient ever even walks into a clinic? It's a future where diagnosis isn't a reaction to suffering, but a rapid algorithmic certainty. This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this, follow or subscribe in your podcast app and leave a 5-star rating. If you'd like to support our work, use the donation link in the description. Now stay with us for an original track created especially for this episode and inspired by the article you've just heard about. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, base by base.
Starts to spin. A cleanup crew in pieces, trying hard to lock in. But one wrong part keeps slipping, won't fit the way it should. So half built wheels are piling where a full machine once stood. Signals in the wiring, flashing red across the frame. Stress lines in the system. Signal, make the next step right.